VBS was so much fun. My husband and I had the opportunity to get to take part in it, and it was so much fun. If you haven't had the opportunity to take part in a VBS before, I would encourage you to volunteer next year because it is so much fun. There's a lot of great moves to the songs. So, my name's Katrina, and I am excited again to be with you here this morning. Today is our last Psunday in the Psalms. I've been wanting to say that for months. It's our last Sunday in the Psalms. We've spent about 4 weeks in the Psalms, and the thing about the Psalms is that they're not prescriptive. They're descriptive. They don't give us a list of things to do. They give us a picture of someone's response to life's circumstances. And today's psalm, like most of them, was written by David. What I like so much about the Psalms is that it's almost like reading David's prayer journal. We get a glimpse of the emotional ups and downs surrounding the crazy events that made up his life, like when his best friend's dad tried to kill him, or when his son rebelled and tried to kill him, or when he had an affair with a woman and then she got pregnant, and then to cover it up, he had her husband killed. Lots and lots of craziness in his life. War, captivity, desolation, desecration. Some of the Psalms are full of desperate pleas for help as he faces the craziness. Some of the Psalms are full of lament and despair as he finds himself amidst the carnage of the craziness. And others are full of praise after experiencing God's faithfulness through the craziness. Our psalm today is a little bit of everything. Now, there's speculation about what might have been going on in David's life when he wrote this psalm, but we don't know exactly what struggle he was in the midst of, but we do get to see how he responded to it and what he learned and how it impacted them and impacted him as well as the lives of the people around him. Let's just jump right to it. It'll be on the screen if you'd like to follow along while I read. Psalm 40, verses 1 through 10. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn aside to false gods. Many, Lord my God, are the wonders you have done, the things you planned for us. None can compare with you. Were I to speak and tell of your deeds, they would be too many to declare. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here I am, I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, my God. Your law is within my heart. I proclaim your saving acts in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips, Lord, as you know. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak of your faithfulness and your saving help. I do not conceal your love and your faithfulness from the great assembly. So this psalm was written after the fact. It was post-pit. It was on the other side of the rescue. He describes his struggle in light of the rescue. I love how he starts off with the words, I waited patiently. Because David's felt need to mention the patience in the waiting is a clear indication that the struggle that he found himself in, whatever it may have been, was not as short-lived or simple as the two sentences he used to describe it here. Situations that require patient waiting always require an element of mental endurance, an internal struggle against the unknown, especially when you're waiting in a pit. Now, not all waiting requires patience, like how we were waiting for our son Trey's passport to arrive. Because we paid for it to be expedited, we had a guaranteed date of when it would arrive by, and it was going to arrive in time, so it was no problem. You don't need patience to wait when you know the end date and the result, when the wait has no bearing on your everyday life. That's just waiting. Then there's patient waiting, like how we waited 5 years for the adoption of Trey to be finalized. Then another year for the birth certificate to be officially changed and mailed to our correct address. Then for the Social Security number to be changed and match his new name, all in time for us to apply for this passport that we didn't have to patiently wait for, because we're seeing Tom's family in Spain. A trip that we bought flights for months ago because there was plenty of time for all of those things to happen when we bought the flights. But there were so many factors out of our control in this, so many things that depended on the successful completion of other things. There was so much waiting. And it's harder to wait when we have no guarantees of results or timing, when we don't know that things will actually turn out like we plan or we hope, particularly when we don't necessarily trust all the agencies involved to not lose the paperwork again, or to tell us all the right documents that you need for Social Security Administration the first time that you go to the office and wait 45 minutes with your two hungry children before, anyway. It's fine. It all happened. Those things happened, and then we got the passport on Friday. So everything's fine. But it wasn't a carry on with your life while you wait kind of wait. It was a stressful, I have to constantly talk myself down kind of wait. The struggle, that's patience being exercised. What does it even mean to wait patiently? My kids have this book that I used to love reading to them. You maybe can't see it, but it's called Cookies, which is subtitled Bite-Sized Life Lessons. And each page is like a vocabulary lesson using the basis of cooking cookies, baking cookies. We bake cookies. So I have a picture of one spread of the pages that maybe you can see. And it's this little girl waiting for her cookies. And it says, patient means waiting and waiting for the cookies to be done. A few more minutes. Aren't I waiting so nicely? Still waiting. That is what patience is. This little girl is obviously in her version of a pit, waiting for the cookies to be done, leaving the cookies in the oven until the time is right, no matter how much you really want to eat that sugary goodness before the timer goes off, fighting the urge to open that oven and just eat the hot dough, waiting and watching. The struggle is real. What did it look like, though, for David to wait patiently in his pit? I don't think his had anything to do with cookies. I have always seen waiting patiently as sitting quietly and still until whatever happens, happens. You know, que sera, sera. Whatever will be, will be. Almost to a point of passivity. But when I look at the life of David and all the different slimy pits he found himself in, that's not what I see. There's nothing passive about David's crying pleas for help. No, I don't think that patience is passive, because passive indicates that there's no struggle. And patience is only present. It is only needed when there is a struggle. Patience is knowing that there is a struggle and choosing to engage in the fight. Patience is waiting, active waiting, and expectation. You know, David waited around 15 years between the time that he was anointed to be king and when he actually became king. But he didn't sit around passively twiddling his thumbs. He worked, and a lot of good things happened because of that. Through his time of active waiting, he constantly cried out to God in his troubles, and God used this time to develop him into the man he wanted to be king of his people. Active waiting almost sounds like an oxymoron, but really, it's a discernment of knowing where to act and where to be still, when to move and when to remain. David actively waited at the ready, expecting that God would do what he said he would in making David king. Now, during those years of waiting before his kingdom was established, the current king, whose name was Saul, he was jealous of David and wanted him dead. Now, remember, Saul was David's best friend's dad, the one who tried to kill him, that one pit. Maybe that's what was going on, maybe not. But Saul was jealous of David, and he wanted him dead, so he hunted him, as you do. And once, while David was hiding in a cave from his best friend's father, Saul unknowingly slipped into that cave, and I'm quoting the Bible here, to relieve himself. Saul was alone and unguarded. He was in a vulnerable position. And David could have easily killed him. As a matter of fact, all the men around him were encouraging him to do so. David, this is your chance. You can off him and be king, and this is all over with. No more running. But David's response in 1 Samuel 24 was this. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. David was more concerned about doing what God would have him do than he was about ridding himself of his enemy and getting out of the pit on his own, fast-tracking to king. He knew that acting outside of God's will would not put him in a favorable position. Because patience is humble submission to do only what the Father says. Humble submission to do only what the Father says. In Psalm 40, David describes his current trial as a pit, a slimy pit. And if you picture a slimy pit, you could scramble all you want endlessly and never get sure footing to climb out of a slimy pit. He also described it as mud and mire. Mire is like quicksand, where the more that you struggle on your own, the deeper you go. Both of those word pictures show us that David was aware that he could not get out of his predicament on his own. He recognized in humility that he could not do it in his own power. And then he reached out to God for help. Humble submission is acknowledging that God's way is best and then walking in it. By humbly submitting to only do what the Father says means that you need to know what the Father's saying. And in order to know what he's saying, you need to set aside your own will to listen to his, to quiet yourself and listen. Listening to God comes in so many forms. It could be a walk in the woods. It could be reading his word at your kitchen table. It could be through an interaction that you have with another person. It's less about what you do and more about the orientation of your focus while you're doing it. It's paying attention. And then after you've heard, following through in obedience. Humble submission requires a high level of trust. And that is the foundation for all patience. Patience is deliberate practice in trust. It's a deliberate practice in trust. Our level of patience in the pit is directly related to our level of trust in God. Trust isn't about the absence of doubt or hesitation or questions. It's a deliberate choice of taking a step of obedience in the face of doubts and hesitations and questions. Trusting is not a foreign concept to us. We trust every day. What are some things that we trust in our everyday life? Shout them out. Clean water coming out of the faucet. The sun will come up tomorrow. Sophie's not here, my teenager, so I can do that. Don't tell her. What else do we trust? The car to work. Yeah. Some more than others.
Our jobs.
Our jobs, yep. Mm-hmm.
Not to be too obvious, but God.
Yep, that's a good one. God. Anything else? Someone mentioned this week that we trust as we're driving down the road that the other drivers will stay in their lane. We do a lot of trusting. It's not a new idea for us. We trust every day. Some things are easier for us to trust than others. Trusting what you cannot see can prove to be very difficult. I'd like to do a little illustration of trust right now. Is Kurt Watt in here? Kurt, come on down here. I just want to do a little illustration of trust. Come on here, Kurt. We prearranged this, guys. I don't just randomly call on people. But he does say free hugs. So come on. Come on up here. I'm good. How are you?
My wife's not up here.
Just give us a second. Give us a second. So, Kurt, do you trust me?
I do.
You do? Great answer. Who in this room do you trust more than anybody else?
My wife.
Good answer. Missy, will you come here? Missy is Kurt's wife, who is a very trustworthy individual. And wouldn't you say that you would trust Missy and I together? Yeah?
I do.
Such good news. Fantastic. So what I'd like for you to do is stand up on this chair, close your eyes, put your hands over your chest, and then when I say go, I want you to just fall back. And remember, keep your arms over your chest. Stay as stiff as a board.
Did I do it from the ground?
No. Oh, my gosh. So when I say go, wait, hold on a second. I need to give you a blindfold. Missy, here. My son made this at Camp Tecumseh this week. It's a night shade. Here you go. No peeking. Okay, Missy, just to be safe, would you stand on this side of Kurt and just stand right there and hold the chair? Because we want to make sure that he's safe. How are you feeling up there, Kurt?
Totally comfortable.
Okay, so I need to get my method in place. So if I could just hold on for a second, and I've got this method of catching you that I'm working out here. How are you feeling? Oh, hey there, Isabella and Roxy. How are you feeling, Kurt? Okay, are your arms crossed over your chest?
Yes, they are.
Are you peeking?
No.
Okay. Is your body as stiff as a board? Okay. All right. Ready? Go. Fall backwards. Fall backwards. Go. Thanks, guys. Thanks. Thanks, method. Kurt, how did you feel when you were falling back?
Generally okay.
Generally okay. You're a liar. And we're in church. I am so glad that that worked out really well for him. You just never know. Anyway, when you're falling back, you may, Kurt, have experienced just a little bit of like, a little fear, doubt, hesitation, questions. Because an act of trust is a step in the direction of God's trajectory for your life, of only doing what the Father says, of walking in obedience. And as I mentioned earlier, one aspect of this submission is listening. Because you can trust with all your heart, but if you're not paying attention, you could fall flat on your face. I want to show a video to illustrate this one. Spare Kurt. Attention to the directions. Trusting God isn't just doing something stupid and crazy and saying God told you to do it, because you could totally fall flat on your face. Literally, you have to pay attention to what he's saying. Trusting God is multifaceted. We have to trust that he's good. Kurt had to trust that I was good in order to fall back, that I was working for his good. You have to trust where God has you. Kurt had to trust the chair. You have to trust his method. Trusting in God is being all in. It's being fully surrendered in all aspects to his will. It's letting go and falling straight back. It's surrendering our timing. How long you have to wait, even if it's 15 years. Surrender the timing. It's surrendering our responses, your fleshly reactions to frustrations, even if the man trying to kill you is relieving himself vulnerably in the cave right next to you, and it would be so easy just to kill him. It's surrendering your responses. It's surrendering your understanding, the need to know how and why and when and where and who, even if you don't understand until it's in your rear view mirror of hindsight, even if you never understand. It's surrendering your understanding. It's surrendering your steps, your plans, and your will, even if what you have seems like it would be a better idea than what you're getting. It's surrendering your thoughts, the foundation of every word and action, even if they are valid, because they might lead to something else. Surrendering your thoughts. It's a full surrender of self. When David experienced God's faithful rescue, he said in verses 6 to 8, "Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here I am. I have come. I desire to do your will, my God. Your law is within my heart." He understood that God didn't just want him to follow the rules. He wanted him to declare, "Here I am. My everything. I stand in full surrender to you. The fullness of who I am is yours, God. I am at the mercy of your will." It's a full surrender of self. And trust is built with practice. It's not an arrival, it's a journey. You don't go from not trusting to trusting. You go from trusting this much to trusting this much. with each step. A seed of trust is all it takes to step out. And then when we see God's faithfulness as we step out, it's easier to take the next step of trust. Because trust is sort of like a catalyst for trust, if that makes any sense. So I want to tell you, I have this picture that's about ready to pop up behind me. This is my kids. Can you see them? This is my kids at Camp Tecumseh. And that is where we have lived our whole marriage. Tom and I met at Camp Tecumseh in the summer of 2001. We got married in the summer of 2002, and we never left camp. Our kids were raised there. They didn't know anything else, and we had no intention of ever leaving. It's such a wonderful place. Look at my kids in this picture. Would you ever want to leave that place? Well, in September of 2017, we felt a new calling. Tom's heart was stirred to take the heart of camp into the community, to help people in our community here feel loved and valued as kids do at camp. Strangely, I had a great peace in the midst of this, that this was indeed what the Lord wanted for us. So we had a calling to do something. We just didn't know what. So we prayed and we asked our families and a few close friends to pray. And what we were hoping for was a clear vision in a specific direction. But what we got was a step. One clear next step. We felt like the Lord told us to finalize the adoption of our youngest, Trey. Now, this may sound simple, but after 5 years of legal guardianship, 5 years of waiting for this very thing to happen, it seemed like a mountain. Because at this point, we had already determined that we did not feel called to terminate his biological mother's rights. And how else can you move forward with finalizing an adoption when she's not exactly volunteering to do that? Our attorney did tell us that we could terminate her rights without her consent, but we had already felt like that was a clear no-go. So, against the better wishes of our attorney, we wrote a letter telling her our heart and asking her if she would agree that this was what's best. We truly had no expectation of her response, that she would respond at all or that perhaps her response would be angry, but that is not what happened. About 5 hours after I tearfully hit send, she responded, "Yeah, I agree. I think that this is what's best." And as we met up in Indy to sign the papers, we had this tearful embrace, and I felt God's faithfulness in that moment, which gave us the trust to take the next step. Because we had hoped after we did that big step of faith, of trusting him, that he would then give us the clear plan and a specific direction. But again, he gave us one next step. And he told us it's time to buy a house, which seems really simple to most people. But we're not regular. And we've lived at camp for 16 years of marriage, and we've never owned our own house. And we didn't know what his job was going to be or what he was going to be making. So there were a lot of pieces missing for this spreadsheet-loving math person to make that kind of a decision. But because we had seen his faithfulness in this first way, it made us easier to step out in this next way. And that was the whole process, every step of the way. And this past November, Tom started working at Habitat for Humanity. And it was so clear each step of the way. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't that we had no doubts or fears or questions or hesitations, but it was that each step of like, and seeing his faithfulness helped us to take the next step, because trust is a catalyst for trust. Our theme song through it all was "Counting Every Blessing" by Rend Collective. It says, "I am counting every blessing, letting go and trusting what I cannot see. I'm counting every blessing, surely every season you are good to me." Now, David responds to God's faithfulness with praise, a song that God put in his heart. And he sings it out for the assembly to hear. And he knows that even those who only hear of God's faithfulness will grow in their level of trust. Because trust is a catalyst for trust. Each step of trust is an opportunity to see God's faithfulness, which makes our faith grow in him, which makes trusting easier. That's why David says in verses 4 and 5, "Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord." And then he goes on to declare the many wondrous deeds of the Lord. A step of trust helps us see God's faithfulness so that we can take the next step of trust. Because trust is a catalyst for trust in the life of the one who steps out and in the lives of those who bear witness. Verse 3 says, "Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in him." But only if we speak it out for the assembly to hear. That's why it's so important for us to be sharing with one another the ways that God has been so faithful. Because God's faithfulness to you inspires me to trust him more. I like to call it borrowed trust. When Tom and I were in the midst of the unknown of leaving camp, I borrowed trust from many people who have gone before us and given up so much more. If my grandparents could sell their farm and their home and leave their jobs and families for Africa, and God was faithful to them, we could probably move 30 minutes down the road and still stay in the same community of people that we already love, but change our job. If my grandma was willing to go down into the sewer of Russia to be with these children, and God was faithful to her there, I think that Tom could go from Camp Tecumseh to Habitat. There's no comparison. We borrowed our trust from those who went before us. I want to take a moment right now for us to remember. In a moment, I'm going to play the song that I spoke of earlier. And if when you came in, you noticed there's these little pieces of paper on your chair. If you'd like to write anything down, I have two questions that I'm going to have up here. How have you seen God's faithfulness in your life? How have you seen God's faithfulness in the life of someone else? It's important for us to remember how God has been faithful to us. So let's just take a couple minutes right now and listen. And remember. It's so important for us to remember how God has been faithful to us to carry us through the next thing. Because as we exchange stories of God's faithfulness, it should be known that a rescue from a pit is not the end. David's story wasn't over at verse 10. In the next breath, after declaring God's faithfulness to the assembly, David began crying out from the next pit. Verses 11 through 13 says, "Do not withhold your mercy from me, Lord. May your love and faithfulness always protect me. For troubles without number surround me. My sins have overtaken me and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head and my heart fails within me. Be pleased to save me, Lord. Come quickly, Lord, to help me." He went from one pit to the next. And just as surely as he began with waiting patiently, he concludes with, "Come quickly, Lord." Oh, David, your emotional fluctuations give me such comfort. Because, my friends, our story isn't over either. We currently sit in a pit of unknown with my brother's situation. Some of you know. So much is out of our control there. And more waiting, the kind that requires patience because we can't see and we don't know. In the midst of our patient waiting for the Lord to come quickly, we remind ourselves of God's faithfulness in the past and choose to trust him and his methods in the present, standing in full surrender of timing and responses and understanding and our steps and our thoughts. We humbly submit to only do what he calls us to do, and we actively wait with expectation because we trust. And we do it imperfectly, friends, together, one step at a time, from one pit to the next. Not every pit is as drastic as the other. Not all of them are as extreme as fleeing murder. Some are as simple as a pit of fear, a pit of indecision, a pit of despair, a pit of a toddler who will not sleep, a pit of a teenager who keeps you up at night, a pit of an unfulfilled longing. A pit is any struggle that requires us to trust the Lord, an opportunity for growing our trust by stepping out in trust. Because we live in a fallen and broken world, I'm pretty sure that David and I aren't the only ones to experience that feeling of being in a pit, being stuck in the mud and mire of brokenness. But God is faithful. Sometimes it doesn't look as we'd hoped. Sometimes it doesn't happen as soon as we'd like, but he beckons us to cry out to him for help in the pit. And when we do, he turns and hears and rescues. So where do you find yourself this morning? Where is your pit? Where's your mud and mire? What area is your patience and trust being tried? And how might God be calling you to respond? Maybe he's calling you to share about his recent faithfulness to you. And if so, let me know, because we would love to hear from you so that we can trust him more. Maybe he's calling you to spend a season of remembering his faithfulness and preparation. Maybe he's calling you to surrender your will so that you can hear his. Maybe he's calling you to be still and continue waiting patiently. Maybe he's calling you to take one step of trust. Will you trust God in the pit, in the mud, in the mire? Because then, and only then, will you receive patience to wait on him. I encourage you, as we leave this morning, to continue this thought process of quieting your heart and your mind to listen and respond to whatever he's calling you to. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for who you are. Thank you so much for meeting us in the pit, in the mud, in the mire, and pulling us out. God, thank you for your timing, for your methods. Thank you for where you have each one of us today. God, I pray that you would help us to see how you're calling us to respond. Help us to remember all of the ways that you have been faithful to us, the ways that you've been faithful to those around us, so that we will obey when we hear what it is that you are calling us to do. Help us to pay attention, God, so that we know what you're calling us to do. God, I thank you so much for each person here and all the different places that you have us in. Help us to hear from you. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.